Llegaron los nuevos McCrispy Strips, listos para aventurarse en la mezcla de mayo ketchup, la barbecue que quedó en el fondo de la cajita, Hot Fudge Sundae y en la nueva Creamy Chili McCrispy Strip Dip. Los nuevos McCrispy Strips, ahora en McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Oh, this is what I wanted to tell you. So the other day, my sister-in-law called me, which is really nice, and she asked me to be my nephew's mystery reader, which is really this cute thing.
I know what a mystery reader is.
It was so... Do they have that at Griff's or Coa's school?
No, but they have it at Becca's and Kate's.
It's so cute. It's so cute. And I read a book that I got them for Christmas last year, which was a book with no words. So it just makes a grown-up say really funny things.
Oh my God, so, I think that's the book Becca picked. You guys were both mystery readers. You both read the same book.
Me and Becca, the same. By the way, doesn't my hair look great?
It does. I've been annoyed by it. If you haven't noticed, I keep changing mine as I look at you. I'm like, why can't I get my hair to look good?
I did my hair last night. If I do it like this, though, it's giving like very, it's very voluminous, isn't it?
Yes.
I just hit the microphone. So my nephew, my sister-in-law invited me. And so she and I both read a book and I walked in and I read it and I got them to laugh, which was like super duper fun. And the night before it was my mom's birthday and my nephew was like, and Carrie, can you come back tomorrow? And I was like, I'll see what I can do. And then I surprised him as a mystery reader. So it was like, that was really, really fun.
Great.
And so then afterwards, he would have had like, you know, gone to like an after school program or whatever. But I got to take him to lunch. And so I was like, where do you want to go, Tommy? And he chose a fucking sports bar.
That tracks. I feel like kids love sports bars. There's TVs. Was like, they're loud.
We played I Spy. I tried to teach him some new tricks. There was pizza. We got to, and I brought a coloring book because he wanted to finish a castle that I had, was coloring the day before. So like we got to color, and it was like just the two of us in this thing. So I'm driving the minivan. He's in the back, and I'm backing out, and there was like a little ballard, like a cement ballard, and I like dinged it a little bit while he was in the car, and I felt horrible. Like nothing, everything was okay. Quinn's face is horrified right now.
Well, I'm just like, I can't believe you felt a thing. You dinged something and you felt a thing?
Well, I backed into like a cement ballard. It was so, I felt so bad. I felt horrible. And Tommy in the back was going, and Kiwi, I saw it. And I was like, how did you, he's like, you weren't looking at the camera. And I was like, I didn't. He goes, well, it's my fault. I should have told you. And I was like, no, Tommy. I go, no. The grown-up who's
and
driving.
And this is how backseat drivers are made.
I go, but I had this, I was
that's
like,
what
no,
you should
Tom.
Feel bad about. You made a backseat driver.
I go, Tommy, it's important. Like, the grown-up is always at fault who's driving. It is not the kid's fault. You know, because I don't want him to think that it was anything was his fault. And I was like, we're going to tell your parents. Like, I just, and I was like, are you okay? And he's like, yeah. He's like, but I saw it in the camera coming. And I was like, it wasn't your fault. He goes, well, it was both of our faults then. And I go,
that's so cute. I love it when kids are generous like that. Because they spend so much time going, it's not me, it's not me, that when they do something like that, it's really sweet.
It's really cute.
Speaks to his love for you.
And so I really do love him. And so then we were going to go to Dick's Sporting Goods because he just wanted to walk around and see some stuff. And I was like, it was that feeling of like feeling, I was a little shaky. You know, I just felt so bad. And so I went home and I told my brother's nanny, who's this lovely Polish woman who I love and is the most opinionated woman I've ever met in my life. Like, for example, I saw her and she goes, Kiri, an inch longer for your hair, then it'll be perfect. She was like, if it's too short, you look too old. And I was like, thank you, Barbara. She goes, are you upset that I say that? I go, because she's very, like, she truly is the most opinionated person. No, when I cut bangs, she came in and she goes, oh, what did you do? Why you cut your hair? She like had a full conniption. And she was like, people don't like when I tell them the truth. And then I just say, I'm joking. And we're like, Barbara. And I go, Barbara, we know you don't joke.
It's not that funny a joke.
We know. So I showed her and she was like, don't tell your brother. Don't tell your brother. And I was like, I have to tell him. So I called my mom and then I had to tell my sister-in-law and brother. So I called them both to tell them because also I was like, I can't not tell them. I told Tommy I was going to tell them. And also I can't trust Tommy. He'll rat me out. You know what I mean? Anyway, so that was it. And then I showed my brother and he was like, oh, it's not even, it's just a little scratch. And I was I know. I just felt so bad.
Yeah.
And I have to be honest, but I just.
No, it's good you were honest.
It's,
I mean, it'd be very weird if you didn't tell them. That's for sure. I'm just like.
It'd be weird if I didn't tell them and then I'm telling everybody on the podcast.
And then they hear the podcast and they're like, that's how we get the info?
And I'm like, that's, you know, now I know you listen.
You need to do a meditation. What? Can I tell you a funny story?
Yeah. So, what do you do with your hair?
Just, I don't know. I probably have lice again. I always do.
When was the last time you had lice? Wait, what's
probably right
what's
now? What's the lice? There was a kid that had lice over at my house last weekend. Literally
what?
A week ago.
What?
Went home and mom found lice. And I said,
do you think your kids gave it to them?
I said, did she get in your bed? And he goes, well, yeah, when we were wrestling. I was like, cool. Cool.
Wait, did she find lice or did she get lice from your family?
Yeah, one will never know. But she found it first. So
I do think you are patient zero in a lot of lice. It's a miracle that when I stayed there last time, I didn't get lice. This year, let's see what happens.
It's not that bad.
It's not that bad. I'm just going to put mayo on my hair as a preventative precaution.
We have lice shampoo. Relax. So you remember Danny, my gym teacher that's so funny?
Oh, my God. The one who I met who was like, you need to go higher weights. And I'm like, Danny,
Steve.
No.
That's Steve. Danny is Sunday service Danny that like
yes.
is sassy.
And it was his birthday.
Like,
yes.
Definitely like. Picks up people's phones when they're ringing, does really, like, he's an oddball. So we finished Pilates the other day, and he goes, I want to do relaxation. We're going to put on a meditation. I've been doing meditations lately. And he puts on a meditation. This is what the meditation said. I'm not going to be able to do it verbatim, but I'm going to try to do it as close as I can. It says, when people say something negative about you, then they say that they're kidding or they say they didn't mean it. They did mean it. And it doesn't matter. You need to feel good about yourself, but you also need to know that when you're joking about somebody, there's something real there. There's something real that is saying something negative to that person that you probably really think. And the same, if you hear somebody saying something negative, believe them. They really do think it, even if they discount it later and say, I'm just kidding. So you really need to hold space for that and understand that.
This is wild.
Wait,
this is wild.
It got really crazy. And then it said...
was it his voice or was it another person?
No, it was like an app he does. And then the next part said... The next part said something like... Also, there are wolves in sheep's clothing. There are people pretending to be your friend. They're not your friend. They will say kind things to your face, but behind your back... They're saying terrible things. They may look at you and tell you they love you when in reality, they hate your guts. They wish you were dead. And then the meditation ended. And Nadine was with me. I turned to Nadine on the floor. I was like weeping. I was trying not to laugh out loud because it's like, of course, it's like we're in class. Oh my God, but I had tears. Tears are like falling from my eyes. Trying to hold in. And I'm like, the amount of questions I have. And he's like, and then the meditation ended. And some woman in class goes, well, I guess we all got to watch our backs.
Do you think?
What in the damn world?
Here's my pitch. I think what he was trying to do is he was trying to smoke out someone who wrote a shitty Yelp review on him.
No, here's what I think. I think he, I think he listens to these meditations all the time, and
wild.
Some of them are more benign than others.
He's about to be in a cult?
So he just hit play on one because he said at the end, yeah, they're usually a little different than that. I've been listening to them on the subway when I go to work so I don't lose it on somebody on the subway, which is like a whole other part of Danny I don't know. But I was like, this is fascinating that you found this app. It's clearly a really wackadoodle doozer bear app where like somebody's just going off.
Give me the app name. Give the people
I don't know
Can
it.
Can do an ad?
But
I'm dying to do an ad for them.
I could not believe that it was like, and that
is
the conflict
insane.
In messaging was like, when people tell you they don't like you, they're telling the truth. Listen, when people tell you they like you, they're lying to you. They don't like you. Like, the theme was, like, you are disliked universally. Know that. Leave this Pilates class knowing that you are universally disliked.
I am to tell you, if I was in that meditation, the spiral. I'm hearing it secondhand, and I'm, like, already going, well, who have I wronged? Who hates me? It does, you know, if they want the meditation to make you look inward, congratulations. They succeeded.
I was terrified. That is, as Koa would say, I was terrified.
I was terrified.
That's but I was terrifying. Like laughing. I could not stop. And then Nadine was texting me later in the day. She's like, you know, I got a little amped up after this work thing. Might just listen to a meditation that talks about wild pigs eating me. I was like, definitely. Definitely you got to relax.
Go, Nadine. Go off.
It was so go funny. Oh.
That is wild, especially after Pilates. A lot of resistance training for your body and like zero resistance training for your mind.
Yeah.
That feels like what that feels like is it's like, hey, you know those thoughts that creep in at 10:45 as you lay your head down on a little pillow or for me, 1:15 in the morning? Hey, all of those should be investigated and treated as fact. Yes, have fun.
It was like that. It was like it that. Was like, don't let go of the anxiety. It's don't really let go. There for a
hey,
reason.
It's there for a reason because feelings, in fact, are fact. It's funny. Feelings are fact. And you feeling put, wow. And was it, as my therapist says, it's 50% them. Like you can't be in control of how someone thinks about you 100%. Right?
Mm-hmm.
They 50%.
That's what I want to do. Let me tell you the order. I want to sing to a couple of people.
I'm going to sing to a couple of people.
And then before we do stories, I do want you to give me I'll take it out of the recording update.
Of what? Oh, yeah.
But let's
oh,
sing. Yeah. Let's we can sing, also... and then we'll do that, and then we'll tell stories.
Okay, great.
Joe,
talk to me
with a J and an O, just two letters.
Joe,
it's a
Joe. Joe, you have two. It's a Joe, Joe, Joe. When you're cute, ho, we love you, Joe. So don't be a low. Crow. Don't be a crow. You are so cool, Joe. Joel, don't be low. You crow. I love you always, forever.
Closer together. You know what I could use? A cup of Joe. A cup Joe, of Joe. Joe. I could drink Joe, you, Joe. Joe. You are so.
Joe. Joe, Joe,
slow.
I love you because you're a traitor, not with the T, but with the D. Because we love Trader Joe's, we don't love Traitor Joe's. But we love you, Joe, because you're not a traitor. We love you because you are a mater.
You are a greater
person. Subscriber.
The podcast.
That's it.
This
that's
one really it. Went that's off it. The rails, Joe. We apologize.
I apologize for nothing in that. I feel like we
good
said your
you.
Name a lot, and I think it was in a fun, rhythmic way. And Joe, I hope you're great. Thank you for being here. Okay, and our next one?
Kim.
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 Oh, Kim.
Kim.
Don't feel
take
so
out
grim.
Your SIM card. Your phone's gonna stop working, Kim. That's
Kim.
How that works. And Kim, if I could Kim. Give you another piece of advice, it would be to look twice before you buy some weird sequin thing to wear for the holidays. Do you really want it, or is it only appropriate for one night or two? I would urge you, Kim, to do a rental.
Is that what you did for my paperless party? Yes. Kim, Kim, you love stories that are grim. We love you so dearly. That's because you're a fan. Kim, you are a star shining in the sky. But beware of buying sequins because it's a waste of time. Kim, Kim.
Perfect.
I love sequins and you. All right. All right. I got this information from Unilad, Historic Flicks, Newsweek, and Vice. I want to talk to you about Dan Saunders. Let's go down to Australia. Is this the second case in Australia?
Yeah, what's
yeah,
going on?
It is. I don't know. I wanted to go down under. Terrible. Really terrible accent work. Australia is very hard. Could you do an Australian accent?
No. No.
Say it. Thank you. Very good, Quinn. Very, very good. Very, very good. So Dan Sanders is a 29-year-old Australian bartender in Wangaratta. I don't know where that is, but my God. Well, I do know. It's 3 hours north of Melbourne. But he's a bartender. And, you know, have you hung out with bartenders? They like to go out. They like to get a little crazy. So it's 2011. I'm just graduating college. And he's going out late on the town. He's out with his friends. And they make this deal. And I really want to wave. I really want to see what you feel about this. He makes a deal with his friends that he's like, his friend pays for the drinks during the first half of the night. And then after that, Dan will pay for the second part of the night. Which night, Quinn, would you want to buy drinks for? Like if me and you were going out.
And it's divided hours?
Between the beginning and between the end.
It's so weird because I can't imagine when you decide you're at the middle. Do you know? Like, when are you totally. Like, now we're at the middle of the night. I would definitely want to be the end person.
Same. Yeah. I think it's cheaper because people are out part, like, you're drinking less. I think you're just, like, in the beginning, everybody's one for
it's
one.
It's a risk. It depends who you're going out with, because that could also be, like, that blackout stage of the night where people are like, should we do shots? Like, you just don't know what's going to happen.
It's a risk. Maybe when I'm in December, maybe we alternate and we see. I'll get first half, you get second half, which just means I'll buy bottles of wine and we'll stay inside. Okay, great. So Dan is like, okay, great. You get first half, I get second half. So his friend buys for the first round. And then Dan, when it comes to his time to pay,
Dan
doesn't have a ton of cash. Uh-oh. So Dan's like, oh, God. Okay, I got to go. Got to go to the ATM, take out some cash money. Because I think he was just hoping that by the time it was his turn, everybody would want to go home. But no, this is a night where people were partying. And so he goes to the ATM and he's pretty drunk. And he puts his card into the ATM and he sees his balance. Ooh, what is the worst balance you could see?
Zero.
Okay, $3. So we're already
really close
winning.
To the worst.
We're close, but it's $3. And he goes, ooh, shit. In another article I read, it showed that he couldn't see his balance or something. Either way, he sees this $3 balance and the ATM is like, hey, we see you're poor as shit. You have the option to transfer funds from your credit account to your bank account. Do you want to do that? And he's drunk enough where he's like, you know what? Fuck it. So he tries to transfer $200 from his credit account into his checking account. And of course, the transaction cancels, you know, and he's like, oh, shit, I think I fucked up. I wasn't supposed to, whatever. So he goes to leave, but he sees his updated balance is now $203. So even though the transaction was canceled from this, like, a credit account mm-hmm. to his checking, it did transfer $200. And so he's like, okay, well, I guess it worked. I guess I just got the wrong thing. So he takes out $200 and he goes out on the town. He parties with his friend. And then he's like, that was so weird. Okay, let me go back. So he goes back and he, like, does another $200 to transfer. And they say transaction canceled, but it shows up as $200 in his bank account. He's like, what did I...
He's like, what is this magical ATM that I found?
He's like, what has fucking happened? So then he's like, okay. So he passes another ATM and he stops and then he transfers like $500, then $600.
So it's any ATM? I thought it was the same ATM.
I think it's a different ATM. I think he just found this like glitch where you can credit trick, you know, whatever. So then he goes to, in some articles, it was like one ATM, but like maybe he went to the same ATM repeatedly in this night. Yeah. And then he transfers $2,000 and he goes home and goes to bed. And he wakes up the next morning and he's like, I was pretty drunk. Did I dream that up? Like, what happened there? And then he sees he has like a shit ton of cash in his wallet. And he notices that like the $2,000 is still in his account or something. And so then he's like, oh my God, I've stumbled upon the fucking... trick. So the next day he transfers like $4,000 and then he goes like he's in the thousands and he finds that this works at any time of day at any ATM. And so this goes on for a couple weeks and he gets like a little nervous and he stops. And when he stops transferring money from his credit account into his savings or checking account. A couple days later, he notices his bank account says he has $20,000 overdrawn and his account is frozen. And so he's like, shit.
So it's like he thought he had a trick. He didn't.
Well, there's a few more tricks up his sleeve, okay. Because he's like, all right, let me see what I can do. So he, like, that night, he goes to the ATM and he transfers $60,000 from his credit to his account. Again, they're like, transaction canceled. But then he goes to his bank account and he sees that he has a $40,000 credit. So he realizes that in order to not get caught, he just has to keep going. Because what happens is basically if he keeps transferring money in, mm-hmm. the bank doesn't recognize it. And once the transfer is canceled, the bank then, like, the bank is behind him. Mm-hmm. So as long as he, like, a couple days behind him. So as long as he stays ahead of it and keeps transferring money into his account, mm-hmm. like, the bank isn't calling him. In fact, okay. the only time the bank is calling him is like, hey, it looks like you're trying to transfer an obscene amount of money. Is that you? And he's like, yeah. And they're like, okay.
Got it.
Like, nobody's worried. But he, like, basically finds the glitch in the system where he's able to just keep transferring money from his credit. So no one is catching on and no one is chasing him for this money. He's okay. just found this loophole where he can get as much money as possible. His girlfriend, who was a teacher at a local primary school at the time, noticed he was getting, like, he was spending more and more money. And she was like, this feels weird. Like, you're a bartender. What's going on? And he's like, that's so crazy. Like, I actually, like, I do some day trading and some stocks went well. And I guess she was like, okay, but this still feels like you're spending a lot of money. And we're visiting a lot of ATMs consistently, and the two of them were long-term relationship and they were dating and they were, like, on the plan, on the road to getting married, but she ended up ending the relationship because she was like, this is weird. Like, even if you have all this money, like, why aren't you saving it? This mm-hmm. makes no sense. And after she broke up with him, he was like, well, the fucking guardrails are off. His spending increased. He upgraded his life. He told his friends and family again that, like, this was from stock. He, like, didn't tell anybody what was happening. And also then when he would, like, meet strangers, he's like, yeah, I'm in finance. And they were like, wow. And he noticed that people treated him differently. Like, when people saw how many zeros were on his bank account, like, they were nicer to him. Like, he really felt a strong shift in how people treated him with money.
It's only weird when you say it that way, because I'm like, who are these people that see the zeros? He's like inviting everyone to the ATM.
Take
like,
a look. Hey, come here. I want you to see something. You guys got to see this. So this has been going on for like 3-4 months, and his life is getting more and more extravagant, and he really goes for it. He travels. He parties super hard. He pays, I think, for women or paid for women and friends to go on short breaks. Like, he chartered a helicopter to take a small group on a little trip to a luxury hotel for like $2,000 a night. But also, like, it's not all Wolf of Wall Street vibes. He kind of has like a little bit of a Robin Hood in him. He helped his friends pay off their student loans. Like, he gave friends money. He also apparently, I saw an article that he helped unhoused people get hotels for a night. So he would like see someone who did not have a home and he would get them off the street by getting them a nice hotel for a night.
It sounds like he's kind of like us. Like, if we just like money was fake and we could just get it. And what would that feel like? Yeah. Like us, like anybody, you would just walk around yeah. and it'd be a mix of like getting yourself sweet shit and doing nice deeds because you just could. Like,
it was like money wasn't an option.
It makes sense that,
like,
he wasn't like being like, now I'm a bad guy because I'm rich. It's like, no, you'd just be
totally
you, and you'd spend money in a variety of ways.
Yeah. And like taking his friends out, like he just was doing. And he said, you know, if you have imagination and money, you're able to help people live their wildest dreams. Like, I can't imagine just being like, oh, totally. Quinn, you want that sequin sparkly dress? Here, let me send it to you. Like, I can't, like, what if that wasn't an object, right? But the bank, nobody is chasing him. And again, they would call him every so often and he'd be like, yeah, it's me. And they go, okay. And there wasn't, like, nobody was putting a stopping, an end to this. On one occasion, a member of the bank called him, a staff of the bank called him, and they were like, hey, did you try to withdraw $900,000 from an ATM the previous night? And he was like, sorry, I was super drunk and I probably pressed the wrong buttons. And then they laughed and hung up.
Great.
But here's the deal, Quinn.
He's like, I just wanted to see how crazy this could get.
Here's the deal, Quinn. If this was you, mm-hmm. okay, what would you do? I mean, would it weigh on you?
No.
Okay, I'm going to insert me. If I had this, like, unlimited loophole and I didn't know what was happening, I'd be like...
No, I would have anxiety all the time.
You would have... You're right. Yes, yes.
Because you know you're doing something illegal and that's not a good feeling. It would give you, like, a heart flutter. All I'm saying is, I don't think inherently what he's doing sounds like evil, where it's, like, loosely evil. I just... I personally, if I was breaking a big rule, would have... anxiety.
Listen, it is loose sleep. It is loose sleep, not evil to me, but it's loose sleep break rules for me. Like if I was doing something like this where I was like, I think I'm going to get caught or I don't know. The bank doesn't seem in on it, but that could change at any time. Mm-hmm. That feeling of being like, wait a minute, is this okay? What's happening? Mm-hmm. I think that like that anxiety.
Every time you get the call from the bank, you're like.
An unknown number, your butthole must be like so small because you just must be so tense, so freaked out and like. This, like, we all know it takes, you have to make, you know, he's a bartender. He's like, this is insane. Like, mm-hmm. this is, I have a secret, like, wealth of cash that I could just, like, get, like, yeah, it's fun when he's, and probably, like, partying is such a good time because he can, like, not think about that for a minute. But if he's partying and he has that anxiety afterwards, mm-hmm. whew, woof. Mm-hmm. But, so it's like, I say, like every good ride, what goes up must come down because it wasn't all fun and games. It doesn't make him totally happy because he starts to have this, like, profound anxiety and guilt. And he is getting more and more and more worried about being caught. It wreaks havoc on his health. He, like, gains weight. He can't sleep. He suffers from panic attacks so much so that he has to go get medication to help. And after 4.5 months of this, his anxiety is getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And he realizes he has to go to the police and turn himself in. Mm-hmm. At this time, he estimated that he spent over, you know, $300,000 plus, maybe $500,000. And so he goes ahead and he just stops altogether. He goes cold turkey. He stops making the transfers and he thinks the bank is going to see his debt and contact him, mm-hmm. right? You just like don't have that much debt overnight and nothing happens. But the debt happens. He stops transferring. It all catches up to him, but no one calls him. In fact, the only thing that happens is his account just closes. So he's like sitting on his hands. He doesn't know what to do. The next month, he calls the bank and he's like, hey, can I speak to the manager?
I did like, this thing.
I think I did this thing that like you're going to be super PO'd.
You're
going
to be mad at me. I got to say, I like this guy.
I know. I like him because I think he like lived fun times, but also like. His reaction feels very genuine and very real to me because it's something that I totally will identify with. And the bank gets on the phone and I think they look at his account. They don't say this. He says that the bank implies that they knew what he had been doing, but they refused to talk to him because they're like, this is actually a criminal matter and we've already handed it over to the police. And Dan's waiting and nothing happens. So my assumption is he like calls the bank and
like
he's like,
call
hey
the police
guys.
Next. And he'd be like, you guys.
He did this. It's me. Hey, it's me. I'm the problem. It's me. But he doesn't. He's like, the bank is like, oh, my imagination, this is editorializing, but my imagination is he calls the bank and he's like, I found this loophole. All this money is being taken. And the bank goes, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. Okay, I'm not, we can't talk to you because this is a criminal matter mm-hmm. and we're going to the police. They hang up. They then call their lawyer and they're like, what do? Are we culpable? What's happening mm-hmm. here? So Dan thinks that this has gone to the police. Dan just sits and waits. Nothing happens. 3 years pass. Ugh. Nothing.
Poor guy. He's just
and
like
he has so much fucking anxiety because now he
like
knows
every time he
has
the
information.
He's like, is somebody gonna pull up and arrest
his SWAT team? He had nightmares of like SWAT team showing up. He just was waiting to see how much trouble he was in, so he started to seek help. He went to a psychiatrist, and the first psychiatrist he went to, and he told the circumstances. His psychiatrist goes, I'm not qualified to do this. And he was like, mate, you're the shrink. Surely you're qualified. So he goes and he finds another shrink. And his therapist is like, the only way you're going to do this is if you turn yourself in. And he's like, I've tried. And they're like, well, have you tried really? And so he decides to go to the press. He speaks to a bunch of newspapers. They run the story. He even goes on The Current Affair, which is the Australian national current affairs show. And he admits to exactly what he has done. And not long after, in 2014, he is arrested and charged with over 100 counts of fraud and theft. He ended up, through all of these transfers, he ended up pocketing $1.6 million from the glitch. Although how much he spent was not clear. The bank never confirmed this, but unnamed sources told the press he spent around $300,000 of it. Because I think he took out money and had a big bag. And when he called the bank, he was like, do you want this money back? And they were like, it's a police matter. Goodbye. So in Australia and in a lot of places, larceny by finding is still a crime. So that means like keeping something that you find
that isn't yours
is illegal, but isn't yours is illegal, even if you don't actually steal it yourself. But so that's what Dan essentially pled
guilty. Find a penny, pick it up, and all the day you'll go to jail.
Good luck. You're just lucky it's a penny. Honestly, I think I understand that phrase now, because you're lucky it's just a fucking penny, because they won't come after you if it's a penny. Mm-hmm. If it's more than that, we got issues. He goes to trial in 2015, where the bank does not provide details of how he got so much money. But they kept stressing, like, the loophole has been fixed. I think, like, he says it himself. He goes, the court was weird because no one actually understood what I did. Not the judge, not the prosecutor. So it was very odd. There were many blank looks. The bank provided minimal evidence. So it was really just a case of bad Dan, cop a whack. And that's it. I pleaded guilty, got 1 year inside, then I was allowed out on an 18-month community corrections order. He was sentenced again to 12 months in jail on theft and fraud charges, and when he was released, he had that 18-month community corrections order. He was ordered to pay the bank $250,000 in compensation, but if he didn't turn himself in, it would have been a lot worse. Like, he would have gotten in so much more trouble.
No trouble at all.
Or no trouble. He went it's hard right
to say.
Back.
I gotta
it's
tell
really
you.
Hard to say. He went right back to bartending. So we end where we began. Mm-hmm. And he also wrote down his story, and he went on to appear and co-host on a podcast called The Glitch. So if you're interested in this story, you should hear it from the horse's mouth.
I would love to listen to this. I feel like and you I could already hear it. Kind of have like a warm spot for him. So.
Eventually, his story would turn into a movie titled ATM Boy. Not a great name. The glitch is better. He says, as of now, that he's much happier having served his time and living a normal lifestyle. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure I didn't listen to the podcast, but I, you know, got to give it a listen. That being said, I'm sure his anxiety levels are somewhat normal, because he's not worried that he is being chased by the police. And that is the story of how one man stumbled upon a banking glitch and went on a 4.5-month shopping spree and the hijinks and mental health challenges that followed. What? The mental health and criminal charges that followed.
This is so hysterical.
Listen, it's our 200th episode. Quinn.
This is our 200th?
This is our 200th episode.
Oh, I always wish I'd like did something better, but.
I do too, but you know.
What would that even look like? Honestly, at this point, I think it's perfect. I'm going to do a short one. All right. This story, if you want.
There's no easy way out when you're ready to go and your heart.
This was an unsolved mystery episode that ended up being really interesting and then attaching to a case I was familiar with. I also read some articles through ABC, and the name of the woman in this story that this story features is Jodie Foster, but it is not Jodie Foster.
Damn.
I know.
Damn.
But that is her name, and she is from California. She moves to Chico with her young daughter as a single mom. she finds this great apartment there that she loves. It has a pool and she's excited to be there. She moves in on January 31st in the year of 2000, apartment 14. Here we come. Hannah, her daughter, is 3 and she is 33. So it's a lot of threes. Feels good. Feels like a lucky thing. But she doesn't love the apartment. Like, even though she is like excited about the complex and being there, the apartment, as they move in, she feels weird about. She says that it has a weird smell and she gets the heebie-jeebs a little. Her blink goes off, but she's not sure why. And one weird thing that keeps happening is that Hannah has this little pair of pink shoes and she always takes them off at the door, as you do. Maybe it's a no-shoes house. And the mom is like, where are your shoes, Hannah? Where are your shoes? Like, they should be by the door. Where are they? Can't find them. Can't find them. Finds them in the middle of a made bed. Like, the made bed. And believe me, I made a bed. You put the shoes on the bed.
I would kill you. I would kill you.
So this is a story about murder. No. She doesn't kill her daughter in that moment, but she should have. It does keep happening.
That's where infanticide works for Gwen, is if you put dirty shoes on them.
It does keep happening over and over again. And then other things happen, too, where she just gets the feeling things are moving. She will have salt and pepper in the middle of the table, and then she'll come back in the room, and they'll be at the very, very edge of the table, like about to fall off. But there's a three-year-old there, so a little unexpected object movement. We're not sure. We're not sure what we think about it. But while she's in this apartment, she's also having spooky dreams. She's dreaming that there's a girl walking down the street in this neighborhood that she's in Chico, and that a couple pulls up in a gray car and asks her if she wants a ride. And then the man in the car gets out and puts something over the girl's mouth and pulls her into the car. So that's like a recurring dream that she has that she doesn't know what it means. Her daughter will be chit-chatting in the other room to an imaginary friend, chit-chatting, and she'll be like, Hannah, who are you talking to? And she'll be like, that girl right there. She'll be like, what girl? And she'll be like, she has a white shirt on. And she draws her. And this is her imaginary friend. And she calls the girl My Liz. And the mom's like, okay, whatever. One night they go out to dinner, and when they come back home, the phone is unplugged from the wall, and in the back bedroom, all the toys are in a pile, and the Ernie toy that is Hannah's is on top of the pile and has a noose around its neck. She freaks out. She calls the police. They take a police report, but like being like, there's a – I can't imagine. Like, we kind of – glaze over these things sometimes when we tell these stories, but I really try to think about calling the police, coming to my house and being like, do you see this pile of stuffed animals? And like how weird that would feel for me too, where I'd be like scared out of my mind, legitimately shaking, and also telling someone like, look at this pile of stuffed animals. It's like it bears
It's worth noting.
Sure.
That's someone's experience.
So they've only been there a month and they wake up in the middle of the night. The mom does, Jody, and the TV's on and it's just static. And this is when it goes full poltergeist moment, where she said the cupboards are flapping, the burner is turned to high, and Elmo, the doll, who says, I feel great, like it's one of, I guess, the... it's one of those talking Elmos, is going, I feel great. I feel great. I feel great. I feel great. And won't stop.
Oh my God, that's terrifying.
Do you die?
Oh no, so she's but like, Elmo will.
Exactly. She's like, sorry, Elmo. I think you're short fusing because the batteries are dead. Takes them out. Puts him away.
Stop.
He keeps saying it.
No, 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 no. No, thank you. No, thank you.
Pictures are falling off the wall. Lights are going off and on. She's like, nope. Absolutely not. So she takes her daughter. They leave. They go to the manager of the apartment complex. And they're like, this house be wildin'. Like, what's going on?
Is wildin'.
Yes. And they come back in with the manager. The dog starts barking. The lamp cord that is attached to a lamp starts swinging like this, like a jump rope, like whoop, whoop, whoop. So then the manager's like, yeah, let's get the fuck out of here. They all run out. So it's 6 a.m. She's sitting by the pool in the apartment complex. She's crying. She's got her kid. And this guy comes over and is like, nobody's lived in that apartment for very long. Like, classic move. And he's like, in fact, there was a woman that once lived there, went missing. And her name was Mary Elizabeth Spinica. Do you know what people called Mary Elizabeth?
I'm fine.
They called her Marliz. That was her nickname, Marliz.
Okay.
So the story about Marliz is that she lived in the area. Her boyfriend and she were at a flea market one day and they had a fight. And she was like, I'm going to walk home. And no one ever saw her again. This was in January of 1976. So like 24 years prior to all this going down, all this spooky stuff. Marliz was from Cleveland. She was outgoing. She was really happy, really beautiful. And the year before she came to Chico, she fell in love with this guy. She wanted to become an actor. And John wants to... I don't know what John wanted to do, in fact, but she's not getting along with him once they move. And she's like, I'm going to come home in April. And then she goes missing. It does have that vibe of like, your boyfriend killed you, where like you were unhappy. Yeah. What's going on is that Jody is seeing a location in her dreams. She's seeing a woman with brown hair trapped inside a house in a root cellar or a dungeon. It feels dark. She sees one light there. She sees a hook in the wall. She knows that there's something around the girl's arms and over her mouth, and that she's even seen this weird couple start to do sadistic sexual things to this girl in the dream. She's terrified, but she feels like this house is related to this dream, and she doesn't know what's gone on here. She wants to leave. She wants to protect Hannah. So after 3 months, she's like, we're out. And then she's like, phew, this is going to be behind me. Dating this guy 3 months later who gives her a book called The Perfect Victim. And she and he's like, oh, there was a girl that went missing from that apartment that you lived in. It's true. And I found the article. This is the girl, Marliz. So she's reading about Marliz for the first time and something strikes her. She's like, hold up, Marliz. Do you remember Hannah called her imaginary friend My Liz?
Yeah.
And she's like, was she trying to say Marliz? Because she was like, this is Marliz. She's my Liz. She's in the room. Like, it becomes weird. Because, like, why was she calling her My Liz? And she's like, you know, kids are more susceptible to that kind of energy. So she finds a picture of Marliz and she shows it to Hannah. And she's like, was this the girl? And Hannah's like, yeah, that's the girl that lived in our apartment. Like, that I used to see. Power of suggestion. Eek. Like, who knows? But Jody wants to read about this woman and her disappearance, and she reads that there's this connection to a couple in Red Bluff. The story is that in 1984, a cop was called to this church. The pastor had been meeting with this woman that belonged to the church, Janice Hooker. Janice is saying, I'm really upset because 8 years ago in 1976, my husband kidnapped and killed a girl in Chico. And I feel really guilty about it. And he's like, I'm a pastor. This is crazy. So I'm calling the police. And the police come and they're like, we're going to read you your rights. And she's like, I want a lawyer. They call the DA. They're going to grant her immunity for her cooperation. And she says, the woman that we kidnapped and killed was named Marliz. We kidnapped her on this day, which was the day that she was last seen walking away from that flea market. And I knew that my husband was going to do that. He offered her a ride. I was there to make it look safe. She got in. Basically, my husband started questioning her, trying to figure out if she had ties to the community. And she didn't really, like, she just had her boyfriend. They just had a fight. He's kind of hedging his bets. And he ends up putting a knife to her throat and putting a box over her head that has styrofoam on it so that no one can hear her. And it's to muffle her screams. They get her to their house, take her out of the car, put her in the basement. She's still screaming. And her husband, Cameron, has read that if you cut someone's vocal cords, you can't hear them scream. So he's asking his wife, Janice, you have to help me cut this girl's vocal cords. If you won't, I'll do it to you. And they go downstairs and they start cutting her. She's bleeding heavily. He realizes it won't work. He hangs her from like a hook in the basement from like her arms.
Oh my God, which is what she was seeing.
She ends up dying. They take her body to the car. They drive out of town. They bury her in a shallow grave. They burn her things. Basically, the whole thing from when they stopped the car and she was walking away from the flea market is only like 10 hours from meeting her outside and taking her home and killing her. So
Janice
then reveals another story about this woman, Colleen Stan, who they've had for 7 years that they also kidnapped. I covered this case in episode 50. It's called Girl in the Box. It's like known as that case where they had kidnapped a woman, kept her in a box for years. That woman's name was Colleen Stan. Colleen Stan had not contacted police about this, but Janice does go to the police and she's telling them about Colleen. If you want to hear about the case that just has to do with Colleen, I covered it. I didn't go back and listen because I remember it being super really traumatizing.
Yeah.
But what I think is interesting and gets lost with when people talk about this is they get really obsessed with Colleen's story because it's so fascinating because she was held as a prisoner for so long and she ends up surviving and there's all these things that people want to talk about around it. What people don't talk about is Marliz. The reason they don't talk about it is it didn't even end up getting prosecuted because they couldn't locate her body. They even go out and try to with Janice and it's like, where did you bury this woman? And it's been 8 years. And they can't pursue this as homicide. So instead, they just go after Cameron Hooker's his name, for the kidnapping of the woman. But he's not getting in trouble for murdering this other woman. And in fact, Marliz doesn't even get discussed in that trial because they say it would be prejudicial. So she's like forgotten. When Jody leaves this house that Marliz lived in, she thinks that those dreams will go away, that the woman she's been dreaming about was connected to that place in some way, that there's a ghost there. But she keeps dreaming about it. And she's seen this couple and she's seen these numbers, 35.76, A17. And she sees this like she's flying over the woods and she's seen this. She's like, I'm going to call the Red Bluff police and I'm going to explain to them what's going on. I've already had to show them a stuffed animal pile. I'm used to saying crazy things at to this the police.
At this point, throw it to the wall, see if it sticks.
So she calls them and she's like, I used to live in Marliz's apartment. I think I have information about her. And they're like, it is so creepy. You just called us. We just decided to reopen that case. And now you're calling us at the exact same time. This is bizarre. She meets with Detective Hale at a coffee shop and she's like, I know this is quirky. And he's like, it's fine. And she's like, I want to tell you about my dreams. She's talking about the dreams of like kind of witnessing the kidnapping. She's telling him about the dreams with the numbers. She's saying these numbers that I'm seeing, A17, I'm seeing the number 35.77. I don't know what it means. He's taking all this info down and it's the year 2008. And then he comes back later to meet with her to be like, I have to tell you something. We talk to Janice to try to figure out where the body is. She says it's buried off of a road.
Oh my God.
In the area. The road is A17.
Oh my God.
We get this description of the road. This is in, and they're meeting her in like 2021 to tell her this. And they're like, we used mapping software based on everything we were told by Janice to try to determine where the body is. And the number that came back to us, like the coordinate, is 35.77. You kept telling us 35.76 was the number you saw in your dream. And basically, Janice, who was there, gave us the same information that you got from your dreams. And she doesn't know what to do with that, but it is like, they just want her to know, like, this is real. Something whatever you is, experienced is real. Like, as a detective,
which I think know is what pretty impressive for a detective to go up and be like, hey, I want to validate what you communicated to us.
There's just no that's way that this single mom that moved to Chico would have known where this body was buried. So what's happening, by the way, just that's that story. And like, no one knows what to make of it. It's why it's on the show Unsolved Mysteries and not something else, because it's a mystery why she was contacted by this ghost of this woman and why this woman was trying to communicate with her and her daughter and basically be like, help me, like help them
right
solve this. The only definitives I can give you is that this is very relevant right now because Cameron Hooker's time is up in prison. And there's a new trial date that is going to be in February or March of 2025. And it's going to be a 2-week jury trial to determine whether he's going to be like retaining his status as a sexually violent predator, which would mean he would stay in the system, or whether they're going to move him to a halfway house.
Can I vote he stays in the system?
Your vote has been recorded.
Thank you. Do you feel like he should stay in the system?
Yeah, I hate that guy.
That's a monster. You can't keep someone for 7 years. No, 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 no.
In
no.
a box.
No, 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 no.
And like,
no, 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 no.
And like, it, and no, no, no. He was never charged for that murder.
No.
So to me, I'm like, that's not his comeuppance. He like took this woman off the street, tortured her and killed her in 10 hours, and then was like, that didn't work. That was a rough draft. And then went out and got another woman and kept her prisoner for 7 years. And it was to like sexually torture them. I mean, he's
no, there's no way. There's no way.
Monster.
There's no way. There's no way he'll be let out. There's no way. There's no fucking way.
There's no way.
Ugh, what a fucking despicable. And then his wife makes me so mad.
I know.
So mad. So mad.
Well, she was like the ATM guy eventually. She was like, I got to tell somebody. I'm going to go tell the pastor. We did a murder, pastor.
God is watching.
They are less likable than our ATM friend. That's for sure.
No, I don't like that at all. Thank you for telling that story. And Quinn, happy 200th episode.
Happy 200, we've done, girl.
We've done so many more episodes than 200. We've hit 200 like 70 ago because we have our own. But this is the official 200th episode on Truly Dragly Creepily, the main feed. And we're just so grateful that you gathered here today to celebrate with us.
Gift, gather, but grateful. Get it, girl.
I
don't know.
Happy 200th. Get it, girl. All right. On that note, we'll see you next week. Business as usual. Happy December. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.